They had to stop halfway through because steam was slipping out too badly. Sam Bloom in the front seat, and that calmed him down for about half an hour. At least Dean's agitation reminded Sam that he didn't need to be following Dean's lead all the time. "Work the case," he reminded Dean. And Dean didn't really know what had happened when he'd been 4 years old, which meant that they needed to start from the basics. That led them to Mike Gunther, who told them about John Winchester's predilection for fortune tellers. And that got them to Missouri Mosley. The psychic greeted Dean by name, which meant that Dean started out freaked, more so when she couldn't do the same with Sam. Sam had locked himself down, egg smooth, nothing left on him to sense, before they got within 8 blocks of her. At least she didn't spend too much time commenting on that. She was too busy looking Dean over and commiserating with him about Papa Winchester's decision to go AWOL. "Your daddy loves you very much," she cooed at him, then shot Sam a dirty glance, suggesting that even without the benefit of her powers, she knew that he had silently called bullshit on that statement. Missouri's home remedies for poltergeists were, unsurprisingly, ineffective. If this was demon-related, then she was doing the spiritual equivalent of issuing a speeding ticket to a spree killer. When Dean's mother showed up, not behaving like any haunt ought to, Sam knew that matters had gone from confusing to downright dangerous. She told Dean she was sorry, but she stopped in her tracks when she saw Sam. Sam was going to break her son apart and use him for kindling. Even if Sam didn't know the details of Father's plans, he knew that much. And still, Dean's own mother just stared at him like he was some kind of savior. And then she burned herself up to save them. To save Sam. Later, when they were lying together in the darkness, Dean admitted that he had never heard of such a thing, one revenant able to defeat another. "She looked just like I remembered," he said thickly, and Sam didn't think he was talking about the flames. Sam did his best to hush Dean, pressing him back against the tired and sweaty sheets and kissing the salt from his cheeks. Dean shook for a long time, trembling in the cage of Sam's arms. All it meant was that Dean was weak, like most people were weak. Sam liked Dean, even though he knew it was a weakness of his own, and he didn't want to be reminded of Dean's vulnerabilities. That was the only reason he felt an answering heaviness in his own chest. When they were on the road again the next morning, Dean admitted that Missouri had pulled him aside and warned him about Sam. "She said she couldn't see my path, long as I was with you, that there was nothing around you but light. I said, so what? And she said she'd never had that happen before. Said, be careful around him, you don't know what he might do." Sam frowned, wondering if he needed to do anything about Missouri just yet. Maybe it's some psychic-on-psychic thing, because of all the multiplying paths feeding back onto one another when both people can see possible futures. I don't know how these powers work. He finished a little mournfully. The first sentence was essentially true, although Missouri's real problem had been the veils Sam had thrown on himself. Otherwise, she might have gotten feedback from him and known what he was. Dean must have taken Sam's pretense of uncertainty as a rebuke, because he reached out without taking his eyes from the road and cupped Sam's shoulder with his hand, his grip warm and sure through layers of cotton. "Hey," he said, "nobody's asking you to know it all, but I'm not worried. Between you and some lady who gave my dad a couple of cryptic hints about demons way back when, I know where the smart money is." Sam knew what Father would say. "It's Dean's fault for not seeing what you truly are. You're only behaving according to your nature." He turned his face to the window and looked past his reflection. They killed a kelpie with red-hot iron hooks. It was sweaty and worrisome. The iron was heavy, even with a mental boost. The fire they used to lure the kelpie threw off sparks and smoke so that visibility was nil, and Sam was convinced he was going to move the wrong way and impale Dean. All to save a couple of kids who'd probably grow up to be as greedy and sinful as the rest of them. "Nice work," Dean said when it was over. "I'm not a kindergartner," Sam snapped at him. "I don't need a fucking gold star every time we do a job." Dean blinked at him, then turned away. He felt a churning in his stomach, like there was a garbage disposal inside of him grinding away. Dean. Nah, you're right, Dean said, still not facing him. You know what you're doing. Because of you, he said. The thought of Dean stopping was even worse than the relentless pressure of his praise. It was stupid to be angry at Dean for believing in him. That was just who Dean was, saving innocence and assuming that everyone human was innocent. Dean, sometimes I don't like myself very much. So when you say something like that, it makes me feel. He stumbled to a halt. Dean had shuffled back, and his expression was one of pure mortification. If I stop talking, will you pretend I never started? Works for me, Dean told him. Sam swallowed. Think those hooks are cool enough to drag out of the water? Let's check. And they did, together. Coordinates? Sam asked, not really believing his ears. Your father sends you a message for the first time since we met, and it's a couple of numbers? It's a job, Dean said, as if that were the end of it. Dean's quiet, manly endurance was gorgeous, yes, but Sam was too annoyed to let it go. 6 months without a word, plus however long it had been before Sam showed up. Not that Father had done even that much to keep Sam up to date, but Father was, not to put too fine a point on it, evil. On purpose. So that's it? You're just going to jump, like. Dean took a loud, ragged breath that shut Sam up quicker than a punch. At least I know he's alive. At least I know he still thinks I can do the job. Suddenly, it was too hard to be looking at Dean from across the room. Hey, Sam said, and Dean allowed himself to be pulled into a hug. Sam pressed his face into the join of Dean's neck and shoulder. Dean exhaled and slumped against Sam, letting Sam take his weight. You don't have to talk about it, Sam said, but I want to know what happened between you two. Dean's laugh had only pain in it. One day he ordered me not to follow him, and by the time I decided it didn't matter how much he yelled at me, the trail was dead. That's what I was doing when we met, you know. Tracked him on the way to California, but he was long gone. Do you think maybe it has something to do with the demon, the yellow-eyed one? Sam held his breath. Dean might know something without understanding its significance. I don't know, Dean admitted. I spent my whole life training to fight that thing. I guess he just decided I wasn't ever. Sam rubbed slow circles, widdershins, on Dean's back. Maybe he was trying to protect you. He left me, Dean said, then pressed his face into Sam's shoulders, hard enough to hurt. I'm here, Sam said, not really aware that he'd even spoken until the full body shudder went through Dean. He said it again when the backs of his knees hit the bed, and again when Dean was stretched out beneath him, slow, fat tears wetting the pillow to either side of Dean's head. We don't have to go, he suggested afterwards, while Dean was still panting open-mouthed next to him. It's a hunt, Dean said, still a little stuffy. Means people in trouble, and he might. Sam was glad that Dean didn't finish the sentence, but he knew that Dean still hoped they'd find his father. Rockford, Illinois, it was then. Sam was a little worried about how easily he'd given in. Dean was so used to taking the lead on hunts, and when Father showed up again, it would surely be in the guise of a hunt. Sam needed Dean to accept his guidance. All Dean's goodwill wouldn't be enough if it wasn't coupled with obedience. Dr. Ellicott's little rage generation trick obviously worked pretty well on normals. Fortunately for Sam, learning to fight Andy off had left him prepared to shrug off most forms of psychic torture. Though he had to admit that pure emotion was powerful. As it was, after he suppressed the impulse to go up there and kill Cat and Gavin to shut their whining mouths, he was pretty sure he had it under control. Still, when Dean showed up, the temptation to use the situation was just too great, and maybe the residual emotion played a role. I'm sick of you ordering me around, he told Dean, threatening him with the shotgun. This isn't my life. This isn't what I want. I don't need you. The words were bitter as burnt hair on his tongue, feeling more like lies than they should have, and the discomfort only made him angrier. Dean didn't flinch. "That's just rock salt, dude. It's not gonna kill me." Sam tossed the weapon aside. "I don't want to kill you." It was just like sparring, except that he was the one holding back now. Just like he was always holding back on his powers, so it really was the same as ever. And he waited until Dean had gotten in some hits that would leave him visibly bruised before snapping out of it and going with him to find and burn the good doctor's bones. "Good thing you fought him off," Dean said speculatively, after they'd seen the civilians out safely. Fortunately, he still had his get-out-of-jail-free card. I felt him in my head and I kind of pushed back, I guess. "I'm sorry I didn't do it in time. Those things I said..." Dean twitched and shifted his body away from Sam. "Whatever. Listen, maybe we ought to be spending more time on these powers of yours. I mean, if you're fighting off ghosts with nothing more than your freaky brains..." "I don't want to be doing this forever. That much is true. But it's not about you, Dean." He almost regretted it when Dean's face went dead for a second. Dean rubbed his thumb over his bottom lip. "Let's get out of here," he said, after a moment. Later, wrapped in his steel security blanket, he had more to say. "Most hunters fear psychics," he told Sam, his words heavy with warning. "Especially if they do more than tell you vague shit about the future. I'm not trying to keep you from figuring this out. I just don't want to take you to anybody that might sell you out, decide you're dangerous." Sam nodded. He didn't want that either. "I'm fine," he promised.
"You know that for sure?"
Sam wished he could tell Dean the whole truth about the powers. Not to hurt him, like Dr. Ellicott would have wanted, but to reassure him that everything was under control. But it wasn't safe, not yet. "If anything changes, I'll let you know." It wasn't a lie, even if Dean didn't know all the details. Immediately after that, as if John Winchester had decided to start taunting his son, there was another message. 6 names this time. It took Dean all of an hour to figure out that their only connection was the route they took through Indiana during the second week of April. Someone was indulging a bit too much in that good old-time religion. The tree worshippers of Burkittsville weren't thrilled when Sam managed to convince their current passing-through couple to let Dean fix their car and get them on the road. Neither of them expected the sheriff to make up a traffic violation out of whole cloth. And then, even after they'd been pulled over, they didn't understand the magnitude of the town's involvement in the sacrificial tradition. So, neither of them resisted being handcuffed, and the last thing Sam heard after the sheriff slammed his head into the door of the squad car was Dean's howl of rage. When he woke, he was in a crappy jail. The good news was that it, along with the rest of the town, had been abandoned for the celebration of the ritual, so he didn't even have to conceal his tracks. He rescued Dean. That was going to be good teasing fodder for a while, at least. And the random local girl chosen to be his feminine counterpart. It wasn't her fault, and she was too scared to make any sort of play for Dean, so he wasn't mad. The girl, who was fairly pissed at the betrayal by her adopted hometown, showed them the first tree. They burnt it to the roots. Dean thought that the collapse of the town's fortunes would be punishment enough for the people who tried to kill him. He hadn't seen himself tied down and struggling, treated like a fucking meal, like he was worth nothing except as a sacrifice for someone else's benefit. Dean stopped them 2 towns over and checked them into Holly's motel and restaurant. A holly leaf stood in for the O in Holly, and somehow Dean had sensed that the whole place was decorated with a holly motif. The room was sort of like a Christmas display in a furniture store, if the window dresser had gotten enormously overexcited. Especially after the tree worshippers, it was easy to imagine that something was looking at them through the leaves and berries of the wallpaper, but Dean just told him he was being paranoid. After they'd settled in, he brushed his teeth and left Dean under a spell that would keep him asleep as long as no one approached him. When he returned to Burkittsville, the girl was gone, but the rest of the townsfolk were mostly still congregated in the old orchard, moping or digging in the ashes to see if there was anything to save. That was convenient. The sheriff saw him first. "Haven't you done enough?" he asked, in a voice as cracked as bark. He seemed older, flatter than he had been a few hours ago. Sam tilted his head. "I'm going to go with no." He concentrated, raising his power. He was out of practice, and this was a good reminder that he needed to sneak off more often, even if Dean didn't like it. After the first black branch impaled the sheriff right between the eyes, the other worshippers started screaming. Then they ran. Neither helped. On the way back, he stopped at an all-night diner by the highway for coffee. As soon as he ordered, a blonde girl with a pixie cut and a wicked smile slid into the seat across from him. "Hey there," she said. "What's a guy like you doing out on a night like this?" He examined her with every sense. "Arba," he said, and she jerked her chin once in acknowledgement. "Nice body." She pursed her lips. "Are you jealous that you can't switch? Not that you have much to worry about, at least for the next 10 years. Have you been working out?" The lasciviousness on her face was extreme, even for her. "If you have a message to deliver, spit it out. Otherwise..." She splayed her elbows out on the table in front of her and propped her head up in her hands, cute as a button. "What, are you going to exercise me right here? I don't think so, little Sammy." "Arba," he said, leaning forward and bracing his hands on the table edge, in case he needed to tip it over onto her. "Not half an hour ago, I killed 4 times as many people as there are in this place. You'd be dessert." "Touchy," she chided. "And here I was planning on giving you the heads up about home sweet home." He waited. That was the thing with most demons, even the greater ones. They could plot and plan, but it was all but impossible for them to avoid gloating when they had a victim right in front of them. Sam thought the impatience had something to do with the fall. "Fine," she said, just as his coffee came. She sat back in her seat and gestured the waitress away without looking. "You'll be shocked to hear that it's down to Ava and Jake. Ansem and Claudia are still alive, but they're just waiting to see who comes out on top." "I should care because..." "Come on," she said. "Ava and Jake are wild to know what you're doing out here." Now she started to build a little hex symbol out of sugar packets, a circle of white, slashes of pink and yellow, shaping and directing the curse. "You can tell them. I have no idea." They couldn't afford to believe him, of course. "And this hunter, the pretty one, what's he supposed to do?" Upon further consideration, Arba removed one yellow line of sugar substitute and started an arc of blue packets, reaching through the circle towards Sam. Sam shrugged. The temptation was to disclaim any interest in Dean, but nobody bothered to explain that they didn't care about a tool. "You should take this up with Father." "So you're just taking his orders now? That's not what I expect from you." He smiled, letting it widen slowly. "Like you said, close to endgame. Pretty soon you're gonna have to pick sides too, Arba." His hand darted out, grabbing her before she could finish the curse that would have killed every human in the diner, including him. He felt the bones of her stolen wrist grate together. She blew a kiss at him and brought her other hand up to sweep the table clear. "As soon as somebody wins, I'll pick a side," she said when he released her. "The point is, Father's not the only one watching. He might think you're the second coming of Judas, but there are other players in the game. You might want to start thinking about how to impress us." "I'll keep it in mind," he told her, already standing. "Aren't you going to drink your coffee?" she asked him, all wide eyes. He tossed a few dollars on the table and didn't bother responding. Emergency trigger on the spell or not, he didn't like the thought of Dean alone, and this was not a helpful conversation. Father always said that the Nephilim were a dead end, a failed experiment. Of course, his human children were also being used as mechanical rabbits to encourage the Nephilim to continue the race. That was just efficient. Arba was the strongest of them, and if she was involving herself, then they really were close to the final stages of Father's plan. He had the feeling that when the fuse burned down,
He'd better make sure that Arba was in the blast radius. Somehow, he'd assumed that Dean's recklessness would keep Dean safe from everything he hunted, like some cosmic dare. He'd forgotten that the house always wins. So now Sam was in this white corridor, stink of adhesive and blood underneath, light so bright that it punched holes into his brain, while a worried-looking man spoke to him like he was an idiot. "We've done all we can. We can try and keep him comfortable at this point, but I'd give him a couple of weeks, at most, maybe a month." He stared at the doctor, wondering whether there'd be a better answer if the man were pinned screaming to the far wall. The doctor was saying something about miracles, and Sam nearly did smear him across the white tile, but he had to stay calm. To his left, a machine bleeped and then went silent, followed by a babble of voices and the thrum of pounding feet. A bulb popped on the ceiling, and then another. When he was sure he wasn't accidentally going to destroy Dean's heart monitor, he went to Dean's room. Dean was paper pale, only a hint of color showing in the creases of his lips. The skin around his eyes was sunken, dark as his stubble. He turned his head when Sam entered. "Have you ever actually watched daytime TV?" he asked in a voice that was tinfoil compared to his usual steel. "It's terrible." "I talked to your doctor." Dean ignored him. "Every goddamn one of these talk show hosts? Possessed. Before I check out, we should head to Chicago and exercise Oprah on live TV. What do you think?" "Dean." "Yeah." After a moment, he fumbled at the remote, and the cheery sounds of betrayal and melodrama shut off. "Hey, you better take care of my car, or I swear I'll haunt your ass." Sam couldn't decide if he wanted to punch Dean or kiss him. "That's not funny." His voice was distorted, like Dean's face had been reflected in the puddle in that basement. The basement where Sam had left him, so confident that Dean knew what he was doing. A fucking rawhead. A literally brainless monster. Dean choked, just for a second, then recovered. "Oh, come on. It's a little funny." His eyes dropped to his hands, which were impossibly still on the bed covers, one finger trapped in the pulse monitor and IV lines on the back of each hand. His ring and his bracelet were gone. "Look, Sammy, what can I say? It's a dangerous gig. I drew the short straw. That's it. End of story." "No!" Dean blinked up at him, surprised. Sam wasn't sure he'd ever sounded like that, like the whole world ought to shake underneath him. "I'll be back," he said, spinning around before Dean could say anything more. He hated to leave Dean, but some of what he was planning wouldn't go down well with Dean, or with the hospital staff. He shouldn't have wasted any time calling John Winchester. He probably sounded like a moron on the message, and the asshole most likely wouldn't even believe that Sam really knew what was going on with Dean. He'd think it was a trap. Fuckhead. The knock on the door made him start. He used his arm to sweep most of his paraphernalia off the table and into his waiting duffel, then went to the door. He jerked it open when he saw Dean on the other side. "What the hell are you doing here?" "I checked myself out." Dean was clutching a little bag of his effects, looking like even that effort was enough to exhaust him. "What, are you crazy?" "Don't want to die in a hospital, Sammy. I figure you'd be trying to think your way out of this." He gestured at the laptop, where the browser was open to Medline. "And I know there's no stopping you, but I want to be here." He wavered on his feet, and Sam grabbed him. Together, they shuffled over to the chair that Sam had pushed against the wall when he'd needed more space for his incantations. Dean didn't seem to notice the state of the room, focusing only on Sam as he sat down. "Have you slept? You look worse than me." Sam didn't understand. It was still light out, and yet the stupid clock by the bed said it was 2, when he distinctly remembered seeing it had been past 3:30 at the hospital. And then it hit him all at once. Exhaustion and hunger and desperate clawing fear. He sagged to his knees, putting his head in Dean's lap. "I've been looking everywhere," he said. Dean's hand came down in his hair, heavy but still gentle, stroking almost reverently. "It's okay," Dean said, and that was the last sound in the room for a long time. other than their breathing. Sam couldn't hate John Winchester entirely, not when all Sam's own knowledge had failed, and one of the contacts in Winchester's journal managed to come through with the faith healer in Nebraska. Apparently this Joshua person liked Dean enough to respond to a perfect stranger's panicked phone call. Sam was nothing but grateful. Once Dean was healed, Sam was eager to get the fuck out of town. Now that he'd achieved some clarity about what he valued in life, he needed to figure out his next steps. As long as he didn't know what plans Father was spinning, they couldn't be safe. It was unlikely, though possible, that all Father required was Dean's cooperation in some endeavor, in a corruption of pure intent, force your worst enemy to help you kind of way. That could be managed, perhaps the blood oath from Father promising protection as the price of Dean's participation. Father liked a bold negotiator. The alternative? Well, it would pretty much suck, because he wasn't sure that all the demon lore he'd picked up would enable him to banish Father back to hell on a semi-permanent basis. If he kept his nerve, and if the Hunter's books were right, there were measures to be taken. It would be awfully useful to consult some of the more obscure texts, though, before he threw that kind of a Hail Mary. Aside from the larger issues that were reason enough to get back on the road, Sam wasn't thrilled with Dean's sudden connection to a dying blonde. Even if it was obviously just Dean working through his no longer imminent demise. Dean's willingness to hand out his light and his smiles like they were nothing made Sam's teeth itch. Worse was his indifference to Layla's mother's contempt. "She's just scared," Dean told him when Sam mentioned it as yet another reason not to worry about Layla. "She wants a miracle, and everybody's allowed to want a miracle." Sam tried to load up the car, except that Dean now had the strength to stop him. Dean insisted he'd seen the Reaper, which made it a case, and nothing would do without they investigate. Even once they knew what was going on, Sam could have been convinced to allow Roy LaGrange, or as it turned out, Sue Ann, to continue playing God with his congregation. Sure, God himself was slightly better, handing out tricks and treats at random, as opposed to judging one person worthy to live in another's stead. But the LaGranges had very good judgment when it came to Dean, so Sam would have been willing to overlook the matter if Dean hadn't been so insistent. Once they'd started investigating, and Sue Ann got her dark magic on, however, they had to finish it just to keep Dean safe. The rage that went through him when he saw that altar, with Dean's picture on it, crossed out in blood, was so intense that he barely refrained from taking care of Sue Ann himself after he'd broken her cross. It was only worry over Dean that let him leave her to the Reaper. On the upside, though it didn't make up for her vicious turn against Dean, the binding spell Sue Ann had rediscovered was really quite powerful. Sam thought he might even be able to adapt it to other purposes. And, possibly more important in the long run, Dean had no problem letting Sue Ann get wasted by her own magic. Dean had never before mentioned killing humans, but it was good to know that he wasn't squeamish about it. Sam was going to have to deal with Ava and Jake sooner or later, and he liked the thought of putting Dean somewhere out of sight, sniper rifle in hand. Dean was depressed about Layla for a while, despite Sam's best efforts to celebrate his renewed health. Sam didn't bother trying to explain that he would have traded the whole town for Dean, because that was hopeless. Instead, he just reminded Dean that they hadn't known about the Reaper. And then Dean really did make them stop in a couple of churches so that he could pray for Layla, even though he admitted that he thought it was useless. Sam considered the churches a small concession. He picked Catholic churches where possible, looking for the goriest Christs on crosses available. While Dean knelt, Sam would walk up to the favored son and take a good look. This was the price of obedience. He had no plans to pay it. Dean was sitting cross-legged on one of the beds, flipping through his father's journal in search of anything relevant to supernatural car accidents. Sam heaved himself down onto the other bed, feeling it give under his weight. He'd have a backache in the morning, and worse, he'd have to wake up to a bevy of swans, from the ones worked into the quilts on the beds to the shapes of the cloudy glass sconces on the walls. "Tell me about your friend," Sam said. Dean gaped for a second, and then apparently decided to ignore the tone. "Cassie? She... I met her when Dad and I were on a job in Athens, Ohio. She was at the library, and she came right up to me." He turned a little, so that he was looking at the dark and silent television rather than at Sam. "I told Dad that research was taking longer than I thought, and we spent a lot of time together. And then I decided I had to tell Dad about her, but first tell her about me, about what I did, and she called me a liar and a crazy person and kicked me right to the curb." The words ran together in Dean's haste to get them out. Sam didn't know whether to be angry at her idiocy or satisfied that she'd screwed up her chances, so he settled on both.
"So, you were sleeping together?"
Dean scrutinized him, then broke into the biggest damn grin Sam had ever seen on him, like sunrise all over again.
"You're jealous!"
But it was only a little bit taunting. Mostly Dean just sounded surprised and happy. Sam pinched the bridge of his nose between his thumb and forefinger.
"Of course I'm jealous," he admitted. "She's gorgeous and smart and has a stable life, and she's obviously still into you."
Dean snorted and moved himself to the other bed, sitting close enough to Sam that their knees bumped together.
"Dude, if you wanted compliments, all you needed to do was ask. A. I know there are mirrors in every one of these cheap-ass rooms. B. Cassie's plenty smart, but I doubt she'd be able to teach herself Acadian in 6 easy lessons. And C. Not even getting into your crazy theory about Cassie, if you're seriously suggesting that I ought to settle down, I'm gonna have to rethink that B."
In his peripheral vision, Sam saw Dean's hands wrap around his knees and squeeze as he leaned forward.
"But none of that means shit. I guess I haven't said it, and I don't plan on saying it much, but you gotta know you're it for me."
Sam's head turned so fast that something inside his neck snapped, warm and painful. Dean looked as pale as if he'd been forced to write those words out in his own arterial blood. After that, it was a blur. The next thing Sam really remembered was Dean staggering into the bathroom to piss, not bothering to close the door.
"Jeez,"
he said, tilting his chin up as he inspected his neck in the swan-shaped mirror.
"Blind, deaf virgins are gonna know what we did this afternoon. You don't think a big tattoo that says, 'If found, please return to Sam Marshall,' would have been more subtle?"
"Not going for subtle," Sam pointed out. "But a tattoo's not a bad idea." Now that Dean had mentioned it, an anti-possession sigil would be a good precaution, what with Arba and probably others hanging around them.
"You gonna get one too?"
With his years of built-up defenses, he needed it less than Dean. But the thought of them wearing the same ink was... it was foolish. But if Dean wanted it, there was no harm to it. "I think I will," he said, and Dean came out of the bathroom and kissed him back onto the bed, making them half an hour late to meet Cassie again. Cassie sent them off with good grace, still thanking them for saving her mother. Sam wanted to see her as a bitch, offering gratitude through clenched teeth, but that would have been delusional. She was a good-hearted woman, even if she didn't want to know about the things that made the world irrational. They'd done good work, saving her. Dean maybe cast off a little more light than usual, but Sam couldn't begrudge him the satisfaction. The two of them had wiped out a racist ghost truck by sending it into a spectral flaming church. No part of that was less than supremely cool. They found a place a couple of towns over to do the tattoos. Sam made sure the tattoo artist had the design right, then sat down on the stool by Dean's head to watch him work on Dean. Dean had taken off his shirt and stretched out on his stomach like that, Sam could see the elastic of his boxers just at the edge of his jeans. At the first prick of the needle, Dean's arms twitched, but his back stayed perfectly still. By the time the artist had finished the first prong of the star, Dean's eyes were completely unfocused, his irises just a thin ring of glass green around pupils big enough to scry in. His mouth was open, teeth and tongue visible, and he was panting, not loud, but steadily. Before Sam took his place on the table, he grabbed Dean by the arm, squeezing the solid muscle there, and pulled Dean close enough to whisper in his ear, "Don't you jerk off in that bathroom. You wait for me." Dean nodded dazedly and hitched himself up on the stool. He'd read different things about how much a between-the-shoulder-blade tattoo was going to hurt. With Dean's example, Not to mention Dean himself sitting shirtless and hard only 18 inches away. The pain twisted easily into stinging pleasure and heat. Somehow Dean knew when he was about to start humping the table, and grabbed his hand to give him focus. They took the aftercare instructions and practically ran out of the place, making it to the car only because the brick of the alleyway would have been too painful for whoever got shoved against the wall. Neither of them had bothered to button up their shirts, so they just collapsed into the back seat, legs tangling and jostling as they crammed too much of themselves into too little space, and stuck their hands down each other's jeans. It all lasted about 15 seconds, and right after it was over, Sam started to feel the ache of his abraded flesh as it rubbed up against the old leather of the seats.
"Awesome," Dean said, his lower half slumping down into the foot space.
"Awesome," Sam agreed. Telling Dean about the telekinesis was about as uncomfortable as Sam had expected. He'd picked an evening after a good hunt in Virginia, a lair of black dogs that they'd put down without a scratch. They'd had steak and fries at a local hangout, then returned to their rooms. Miniature railroads, including a track that ran all the way around the room just under the ceiling. Dean insisted on turning the little raid train on as soon as they finished setting the wards, even when Sam threatened him with an ass-kicking. Dean flopped down on the bed, signals and tracks printed on the bedsheet, and watched the train whir around the room, clicking as it turned the corners. Dean grinned every time it made its program's steam whistle sound. Dean pouted when Sam flipped the switch. "We need to talk," Sam told him, before he could begin a wrestling match or any other distraction. Dean groaned and dropped his face into the triangle formed by his arms on the bed.
"What's happening to me has gone beyond visions," Sam said.
Dean's head snapped up, fast as a switchblade. Sam thought about demonstrating by smashing the fucking red train to a scrap, but that would probably not make Dean very happy. Instead, he pointed at John Winchester's journal, sitting on a side table that was painted to resemble a boxcar.
"Watch," he said.
The journal came speeding into his hands. Dean cursed, then he got up and paced, and then he cursed some more. Then he made Sam swear that no one else had seen him move anything with his mind. After Dean calmed down, he became a hunter again, and his speculation soon brought him near where Sam needed him to be. "You're the only kid who survived the demon. Psychic mojo doesn't seem like a coincidence. Maybe you have the power to destroy him." Sam hesitated. This was so delicate, and he didn't quite see a way to prepare Dean that wouldn't get his hopes up unfairly. Dean was strong, and Sam was going to make him stronger, so he just said it. "We don't know all those kids died." Dean frowned at him, confused. "I've been over all of the records, Dean, and the evidence that every one of those kids died at their mother's, it's thin. It's really thin. There should have been more remains. One time wouldn't be that surprising, but there were dozens of that more than a handful of... well, you know." Dean's voice was as flat as day-old soda.
"What do you think we buried beside my mother, then?"
Sam bit his lip. "Most of the kids died, there's not much doubt of that. I don't think your brother is out there. But there's a possibility that the demon deliberately took some of the children, maybe put them where he could watch them grow up, like an experiment. Maybe if they were psychics, like me, he thought he'd be able to control them." Dean rubbed his hand through his hair, making the short spikes stand up even more stiffly.
"And you? What about you? What makes you so special that you didn't get taken or dead?"
Sam got hung up on, I don't know, because he couldn't make himself tell the lie again when Dean was this raw. "My childhood didn't exactly leave me filled with love for humanity. I think I'm just another one of the demon's experiments, but I'm not planning to let a demon push me around." Hibbing, Minnesota, was a kick in the pants. Or, as Father would have said, a lesson in the necessity of humility. Ordinary fucking humans, except for being psychotic serial killers, and they got the drop on Sam. By the time Sam woke up, Dean had already started scamming the local law, though Sam didn't know that at the time. All he knew was that Alvin Jenkins was not going to enjoy his little run through the forest. He did try to warn Jenkins when the cage opened. And then, after Jenkins had been gone for 2 minutes, he sighed and busted open the seams of his cage. If any of his captors were watching, he'd be hard put to explain himself, and his powers weren't good around corners or through walls, which made houses a bad place to fight. But he could just imagine how Dean would behave if he'd been the one who got cold-cocked, and how Dean would say terribly awkward things to make him feel better if Jenkins ended up dead. So he followed Jenkins out into the trees. The men, the Benders, as he later found out, might have been good hunters, but they were terrible prey. His only woodcraft had been learned from Dean, and yet he had no trouble following Jenkins and finding the two men on his trail. He didn't even have to use TK against the first one, just walked up behind him and snapped his neck, swinging the still-twitching body around in case the second one had a shotgun. But no, it was just a big fucking knife. Sam didn't want to have to explain too much to Dean about how these guys had shuffled off this mortal coil, so he pushed the second one up against the tree, holding him there until he could walk over and repeat the process. He hadn't been eye to eye with anyone he was killing since Max. The guy was smelly and disgusting, and probably a cannibal, but it was still... He couldn't explain it to himself, but it was more like the grim scut work of spell preparation than the satisfaction of victory. Jenkins could find his way onto the road on his own, so Sam headed back to the house. And that decision might have come from a premonition, because then he was just in time to help out Dean and the cop, the one who'd locked Dean to her squad car for impersonating a police officer. The cop, who got revenge, but didn't get her brother back. Dean sat with her for a while before the evidence van showed up. She talked more than he did, and at the end they clasped hands. Sam felt no jealousy this time. Instead, he had the oddest thought. If he could convince Dean to give up the hunt for the demon, maybe Dean could be happier. Except that Father was going to force the issue, and Sam would have to find a way to satisfy Dean's thirst for revenge without getting him and Dean both skinned. If he could appease Father, he could then order Dean to forget. But he'd never had Andy's fine control, and it was very easy to take away vital parts of a person. Father's death would be the optimum solution, as always. Still, Sam was pretty sure that a devil's trap and an exorcism weren't going to get the job done. It was the same problem that had stymied him for the past few months, and he was no closer to a solution, no matter how many local libraries they visited. "How many people would you say we've saved together?" Sam asked. Dean didn't answer immediately. Rain turned the world outside into blurry, bruised dark streaks. His hands tightened and relaxed on the steering wheel, in unconscious imitation of the windshield wipers. "I haven't been keeping count. Why, you gonna quit when we hit 3 digits? "No," Sam protested. Then, when he'd had a chance to interpret the look on Dean's face, "Of course not. Just, I wondered, you know? I never saved anyone before I met you." He felt the understatement like a fist-sized rock in his stomach. "If it makes you feel good, we can keep a list," Dean said, "or write it in glitter pen." Sam flipped him off and turned the heat up, letting it bake the dampness out of his clothes. Dean spent the next 50 miles suggesting that a hand job would be a good reward for inducting Sam into the ranks of heroes. "I can't believe you never learned how to sew a button," Dean bitched, then cursed and sucked on the needle-stung tip of his index finger, which guaranteed that Sam wasn't paying any attention to his words. "Seriously," he said, squinting as he threaded the needle again. "Not even once?" Sitting cross-legged on the other bed with his shoulders rounded as he bent over his work, fiercely intent, he looked younger than usual, softer. "I never needed to," Sam said, idly counting the balloons painted on the lampshade nearest him. "Circus-themed room. Fucking creepy, and also bright. Never had to think about it. When I needed new clothes, I just got them." "Well, so did I," Dean said, raising his eyebrows as he glanced over at Sam. "I don't know what you mean by need." "I wasn't spoiled," Sam said, feeling obscurely attacked. Material abundance can coincide with emotional deprivation, you know.
Dean brought the needle up, down, crisscrossing the thread over itself.
Sure, I knew whatever the hell you just said.
You can have a lot of stuff and still have nothing, he snapped, and reached out to turn the lamp so that the damned red-mouthed clown wouldn't be smirking at him. Unfortunately, there was an equally disturbing clone on the other side, though this one had a drum instead of a bunch of balloons.
Dean threw the shirt down. Its dark green plaid engaged in a color war with the cavorting circus animals embroidered on the bedspread.
Help me out here, dude.
He put his head down and pushed the heels of his hands against his closed eyes. I've never been happier than I am right now.
Dean breathed, loud in the otherwise silent room. I can see the problem.
But the bravado was hollow, and the words didn't sound mocking at all.
No, he said, wanting Dean to understand. The only thing he could see was the pressure-created starbursts of white behind his eyes. I mean, I have never felt like this, and I am so fucking terrified that you're gonna get hurt, or... It was so much easier when I didn't have anything to lose. After a moment, Dean's weight made the mattress dip underneath him. Dean's shoulder brushed against his, Dean's version of Eskimo kisses.
After we kill that demon, Dean said, then stopped. He was still a terrible liar.
Sam let his hands drop to his knees.
You are who you are, Dean. I worry.
If you don't want me getting hurt, Dean said at last, you could start by learning how to fix your own damn shirts.
As deflection, it was far from his best effort. Sam gave him a watery smile anyway, and managed to sew the button a good half inch from the right spot on his shirt. Sam made them wear the alarm company uniforms in Chicago, mostly because he planned to do a little role-playing later on. Dean had already played the police angle, talking a hapless tech support guy into giving him a password, so they knew that Meredith Moore's heart had been removed. But it was different to see the blood all over her apartment. Even with her body gone, the smell of rot had sunk into the furniture and the walls. Walking through the dead girl's rooms, checking out the food she'd never get to eat and rifling through the mail she'd never get to read, Sam felt there was a hole in the world. He tried to shake the unfamiliar regret off. It wasn't his fault she was dead, and he was going to get the thing that killed her. Dean was staring at the bloody carpet when Sam returned to the living room.
You find any masking tape? Dean asked.
Later, they stared down at the symbol formed when Dean connected the key blotches of blood. It was a rounded Z, interrupted by a circle in the middle.
I've seen that before, Sam said.
Dean raised his eyebrows.
You must really be doing your homework, 'cause I never did.
It's Zoroastrian, a sigil for a deva.
Huh, Dean said. Deva's a demon of darkness, right? Savage, even for demons? Which, when you think about your ordinary average demon, means they really make an impression.
They looked around at the blood again.
Not false advertising, Sam said.
A deva has to be summoned. Dean bent down on one knee, not touching any of the lines.
I don't think anything in this apartment did the summoning. There's no other sign here.
If I remember right, they're not known for being happy about being conjured. They like to slip the leash, take it out on the summoner.
Yeah, but bringing up a demon nobody's seen in millennia? That's got to take some pretty serious chops. Maybe our conjurer thinks he's got it under control. Your extracurricular reading give you any idea what they look like? I never saw a picture, just some references to legends.
Sam shook his head, wishing that he'd managed to break into Father's private stash of profane texts before he left. At the bar they found for dinner, Dean was showing him the records on the earlier victim, Ben Swardstrom, when Sam felt a ripple of attention pass over him. He snapped his head up and saw Arba's latest host across the room. She smiled and came over.
Hey there, Sam!
He could practically feel every muscle in Dean's body turn to stone.
Hello, Sam said cautiously.
I'm sorry.
Meg, she said brightly. Meg Masters. We met a couple weeks back.
She confided to Dean. You must be Dean.
Dean's eyes grew bigger.
Dean, you mind taking care of our tab? Sam asked, reaching out without looking to squeeze Dean's forearm.
Dean didn't say anything, but he stood and headed for the bar.
What the fuck do you want? Sam asked, keeping his tone pleasant.
Just checking in, she said. Dad is getting ready to make his move. We wanted to be sure you had the hunter wrapped around your finger.
Why? He asked. Even a lie might give him useful information.
She shrugged.
You know Daddy.
I've got it under control, he said. Even with you trying to fuck it up like this.
Arba laughed, a trilling sound that cut through the babble of other conversations.
Dean's head swiveled away from the bartender, who was attempting to chat him up as she made his change.
Seriously? A little mystery is good for a relationship, I always say. Hey, here's my number. We should talk more when your Patsy's not here.
Sam took the scrap of paper from her, barely concealing his sneer, and she was gone before Dean made it back to the table.
Who is that? Dean asked.
Not here. Dean managed to keep silent until they got back to the motel. Framed pictures of John Deere tractors and lampshades that looked like they were made out of sheaves of wheat, even though Sam caught him opening his mouth several times. Full disclosure was still out of the question, but Dean needed to know that they'd made the major leagues and were about to start the playoffs.
I met her outside of Burkittsville, Sam began, as soon as he put down the last line of salt. I thought she was just another hitchhiker, but running into her again while we're on a case like this? I don't think it's a coincidence.
You think she's our Sumner?
I think she's something, and she wants us to know it.
What did you tell her about me?
Dean was absolutely terrible at feigning casual interest, and would have been unconvincing even if he hadn't been rifling distractedly through Sam's bag instead of his own.
Sam took a half step towards Dean.
Nothing, just your name. She was fucking with you, Dean. He didn't even know if he was credible. That's how badly she'd thrown him.
No, be honest. Arba wasn't the problem. The problem was that he wanted Dean to believe him.
I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't.
Dean stopped his busy work and put up his hands.
Hey, he began, and then swallowed whatever he'd meant to say.
Instead, he reached out, and Sam stepped into his arms.
There's things I haven't told you, Sam whispered into his shoulders, but I would never hurt you.
At least his priorities were clear. Fight off Arba and her Deva. Take Ava and Jake and the rest out of the running. Use the leverage of being the last child left. Make whatever deal with father that was necessary to keep Dean safe. Whatever Dean was for, there had to be alternatives that kept him alive. Father wouldn't raise 40 kids to get one survivor, and then let it hang all on one hunter.
Dean shifted under his touch, slowly raising his hands to stroke down Sam's back.
When they broke apart, they still couldn't meet each other's eyes. Finally, Dean laughed, a little too loud.
We really need to get our heads out of our asses. That Deva's not gonna care about our high school drama.
I've got an idea about how to take the edge off, Sam said immediately, reaching for the hem of his shirt.
Dean raised one eyebrow. Dude, that's the same idea you always have.
And has it ever gone wrong?
Don't talk about the whipped cream,
he warned as he retrieved the alarm company uniforms from its place at the top of his bag. Anyway, this idea is a little different. Dean didn't ever really lose that look of incredulity the entire time he was playing the clueless customer. But being the hunky service provider was a good idea because Dean kept cracking up and making bow-chicka-bow sounds. By the time they actually made it to the bed, Dean was as happy and sweet as Sam could have hoped. Sam reinforced the wards with his own blood before making sure that Dean would stay down with the same sleep spell as before. He didn't need Arba's phone number, but the piece of paper she'd given him was good for other methods of location as well. In fact, the charm he used led him right to the warehouse, which was the best result he'd ever had.
In the past, he'd never been able to get more specific than a few city blocks. He didn't recognize Arba's black altar with its Zoroastrian symbol garnished with human hearts, but the silver chalice of blood was fairly self-explanatory. For a moment, Sam wished he was the one making the call, hearing that satisfied, confident voice that always promised a reward just over the horizon. Father had set the terms of his self-image for so long. Even rebellion was a way of measuring himself against Father. But both obedience and defiance were tools, not ends. Father had hung in Sam's life like a gibbous moon, too big to see anything else. He had Dean to think of now. He shook off the introspection and listened closer. Unfortunately, Arba didn't actually say much to Father. Nothing that she couldn't have said using a cell phone, if she hadn't been behaving in classic demon fashion. One of the Nephilim would never use cheap, effective technology when bloodshed could substitute. Sam wondered, given her blatancy at the bar, whether she was working with some other party against Father. If that were so, then that increased the danger to Dean and him. Collateral damage killed, just as dead as direct aim. He left the warehouse just after she did, nervous all over again about the wards he'd left on the motel room. The sleep spell snapped as soon as he opened the door to their room, but he made it to the side of the bed before Dean could do more than reach for his gun. "Sammy?" Dean rubbed at his eyes. Sam tugged at his boots as if he were just putting them on. "I had a vision," he said. Dean rolled into a sitting position, still blinking, his face scrunched up and creased from being shoved into the pillow.
"You okay?"
"Yeah, I'm fine. But Meg? She's controlling the Deva. I saw where she's doing it, a warehouse down on West Erie, and I saw her communicating with someone, or something, using blood, a cup of blood." Dean reached for his discarded t-shirt on the floor, grumbling as he tugged it on. "Someone or something other than the Deva?" "She was talking about waiting for it to show up, and the Deva's already here. I don't think you have a conversation with the Deva anyway. Sit and heal are the best you're gonna do." Dean stood and shuffled into his boxers. "Listen, there was something I thought of." He stopped to yawn and scratch his belly. Sam waited as Dean made his still-slow way over to the laptop and fired it up. "The complete records of the two victims? We missed something the first time."
"What?"
Sam came over and leaned one elbow on the table next to Dean's, reading over his shoulder. "The first victim, the old man? He spent his whole life in Chicago, but he wasn't born there. Look where he was born." "Lawrence, Kansas." "Meredith, the second victim? Turns out she was adopted. And guess where she's from?" They stared at each other. Dean's eyes were inches from his, bright and worried. He could feel the heat coming from Dean's skin, even as Dean shivered. Sam pushed himself back. "So, Meg's connected to the demon, who may be coming here. But that's not enough information." Dean was pulling out his cell phone. Sam frowned at him, confused, but Dean held up his hand and waited long enough that the call plainly went to voicemail. "Hey, we think we got a serious lead on the thing that killed Mom and Sam. Dad, if you get this, get to Chicago as soon as you can."
"We?"
Sam couldn't help asking. Dean gave him a full duh face, brows lowered and quizzical dimples.
"What'd you want me to say?"
Sam didn't really have an answer for that. It wasn't like old man Winchester was going to show, anyway. If he didn't come when his son was dying, then he was unlikely to run to Dean's side because of some vague hint.
"So what happens if we take this thing out?" Dean asked. "Send the demon back to hell. Is that it?"
Sam wished he'd gotten even the few hours of sleep Dean had managed.
"What?" "You got into this because of your freaky visions about me, and were connected by the demon. With it gone, you could go back to the real world and do whatever you wanted."
Dean said it carefully.
"What do you want to do?"
Dean bent over the computer and started closing files.
"Always gonna be hunts."
"That's not what I asked." His voice came out soft.
"What do you want, Dean? You've gotta say it."
I want everything, all right? Dean closed the laptop just a little too forcefully. I want to stay with you, and I want to save people and kill bad things. Hearing Dean's definition of everything made Sam's chest feel hollowed out and waterlogged. He'd been raised to think that all the kingdoms of the earth were only the beginning. Done, he said. Dean turned his whole body in the chair as Sam went to his knees beside him. You couldn't make me go, he breathed, low enough that Dean bent his head to get closer. Somehow, someway, he'd explain everything to Dean. Depending on what they had to do to survive, there might be a much greater call for hunters in the future.